You are working in the newborn nursery caring for Jessica Peterson, an 8-pound, 4-ounce, healthy-appearing female infant born at 39 weeks gestation. The pregnancy and delivery were without complications. Jessica's Apgar scores were 8 at 1 minute and 9 at 5 minutes. She appears well on her first day of life, but on your physical exam, you hear a harsh holosystolic murmur at the left lower sternal border. As you prepare to explain this finding, you wonder, how will you explain the pathophysiology to Jessica's parents, and what is the next step in diagnosis? Consider your answers as we begin this next episode. Welcome to AudioBricks. I'm Adam Weinstein, bringing cardiology from our bricks to your ears. Let's get started demonstrating how kids are not little adults. After completing this brick, you will be able to 1. Define ventricular septal defect, or VSD, and describe its clinical presentation. 2. Explain the pathophysiology of a VSD and the associated complications. 3. List the diagnostic tests used to confirm the diagnosis of VSD. And 4. Explain the management options for a VSD. Part 1. What is a ventricular septal defect? Ventricular septal defects, or VSDs, are the most common congenital cardiac anomaly, occurring in approximately 4 of every 1,000 births. As the name suggests, a VSD is caused by an abnormal opening in the tissue of the intraventricular septum, which normally separates the highly oxygenated blood of the left ventricle, or LV, from the poorly oxygenated blood of the right ventricle, or RV. When a VSD is the only congenital heart defect in a patient, it is an acyanotic defect with a left-to-right shunt. It is acyanotic because oxygenated blood remains in the peripheral or systemic circulation, and in fact, it is oxygenated blood that shunts to the right ventricle, which has poorly oxygenated blood, rather than the reverse. Okay, here's a quick question that you'll want to know. What type of shunting is initially caused by a VSD? If you said left to right shunting, you are correct. Part 2. How do patients with ventricular septal defects present? The clinical findings for patients with VSDs largely depends on the size of the defect. In both children and adults, small VSDs generally do not cause symptoms. In fact, around half of congenitally small to moderate-sized defects resolve spontaneously by 2 years of age. In contrast, infants born with large VSDs may present with significant symptoms of heart failure. This may include tachypnea, poor feeding, impaired weight gain, and frequent lower respiratory tract infections within a few months after birth. In older children and adults, large VSDs would present with symptoms of congestive heart failure such as dyspnea and fatigue on exertion. On physical exam, expect to hear a harsh holosystolic murmur at the lower left sternal border without radiation. Counterintuitively, the smaller the VSD, the louder the murmur, because the tighter the shunt, the more turbulence through it. In patients with large VSDs, there may also be physical exam findings of heart failure. In infants, this typically presents with hepatosplenomegaly and peripheral edema. There is not cyanosis associated with an isolated VSD. Let's review this with a question. Why is a VSD considered an acyanotic congenital heart defect? A VSD is considered acyanotic because the left-to-right shunt keeps the poorly oxygenated blood from reaching the systemic circulation. Part 3. What is the pathophysiology of a ventricular septal defect? To understand the pathophysiology of a VSD, let's first review the relevant steps in fetal cardiac development, focusing on the formation of the interventricular septum. The interventricular septum is composed of two parts, a membranous portion and a muscular portion. The membranous septum forms from the endocardial cushions, which are structures that ultimately help to separate the four chambers of the heart. In addition to forming the membranous part of the interventricular septum, they also form the mitral and tricuspid valves. The membranous septum develops from the central part of these cushions and develops inferiorly towards the inferior part, or the floor of the heart. It is from this floor of the heart where the muscular portion of the interventricular septum forms. The muscular septum forms at the floor and develops superiorly where it meets the membranous septum, and there they join together to complete the interventricular septum toward the end of the seventh week of gestation. As you may have guessed, the development of the interventricular septum does not always go according to plan, and errors in this process may result in a VSD. The majority of VSDs develop in the membranous portion of the septum, whereas VSDs in the muscular portion of the interventricular septum occur less commonly. To review, what is the most common location for VSDs to develop? That's right, the membranous portion of the interventricular septum is the most common place for a VSD to form. Because fluids naturally flow from areas of high pressure to those of low pressure, a VSD will allow blood to flow from the high pressure LV to the low pressure RV, creating a left-to-right shunt. This shunt moves oxygenated blood into the right heart, and so it does not affect the oxygen levels in the arterial circulation. So why are VSDs so problematic? Well, for two reasons. First, since blood from the LV is entering the RV, less blood is being ejected into the systemic circulation. Consequently, a heart with a VSD will have to work harder, with more beats, under stronger contractions, to achieve the same cardiac output as a normal heart. Heart failure can result. Second, the RV and pulmonary circulation receive a larger amount of blood than normal. To compensate for the increased pressures associated with this increased blood volume, both the RV and pulmonary artery walls may undergo adaptive remodeling, leading to RV hypertrophy and pulmonary artery hyperplasia. In turn, these developments can lead to high right-sided heart pressures and findings of right heart failure, like edema or hepatomegaly. Let's review this pathophysiology with a question. How does the RV and the pulmonary arteries adapt to the increase in blood volume that occurs with a VSD? The RV adapts by wall hypertrophy, and the pulmonary arteries adapt by hyperplasia of the cells in their walls. So based on what we were just discussing, the most common complication of a VSD is right heart failure. Over time, if these higher right-sided pressures worsen and continue to increase, the remodeling of the RV and pulmonary arteries can sometimes cause the right-sided pressures to exceed the left-sided pressures, and the left-to-right shunt will become a right-to-left shunt. This reversal of a left-to-right shunt is also known as Eisenmenger syndrome. Part 4. How do we diagnose ventricular septal defects? VSDs are typically diagnosed by physical exam and imaging studies, especially echocardiogram. We already discussed some of the anticipated physical exam findings as we discussed the clinical presentation. But to review, the most definitive finding is a harsh holosystolic murmur at the lower left sternal border without radiation. This is located in the tricuspid area of the heart. The intensity of a VSD murmur may change over time. Although VSDs are present at birth, a murmur may not be heard immediately after delivery because the pulmonary vascular resistance is still quite high in the perinatal period. The elevated pulmonary vascular resistance leads to increases in RV pressures. The increases in RV pressures lower the pressure gradient between the LV and the RV, thus decreasing the left to right shunting across the VSD in the immediate neonatal period. As pulmonary resistance and right heart pressures decrease naturally after birth, the pressure gradient between the LV and RV increases, leading to greater shunting across the VSD. As a result, a murmur becomes audible. In contrast, murmur intensity may decrease over time if a moderate to large VSD is not corrected and right heart pressures steadily increase towards an Eisenmenger syndrome. This occurs because the ongoing remodeling of the RV and pulmonary vasculature leads to increasing RV pressure and therefore less of a pressure gradient between LV and RV. Why might an uncorrected VSD murmur lessen over time? Uncorrected VSDs, if moderate to severe, may lead to ongoing remodeling of the RV and pulmonary vasculature, elevating RV pressures. The increased RV pressure reduces the pressure gradient between the RV and the LV, so blood flow across the shunt reduces. When a VSD is suspected, an echocardiogram with Doppler is the best imaging test to confirm it. It can be used to localize a VSD in the interventricular septum, as well as provide information regarding the direction and magnitude of the shunt. Additional diagnostic testing that may be pursued includes cardiac catheterization. This is typically done to measure pressures and oxygen saturation more precisely when deciding upon a procedural or surgical correction. Of note, a cardiac catheterization may help identify how the left to right shunting of blood across the VSD leads to an increase in oxygen saturation in the RV and pulmonary artery compared to the right atrium. Let's do a quick question before moving on. What is the effect of a VSD on right ventricular oxygenation? If you said that the left to right shunt causes the oxygenation in the RV to increase, you would be correct. Part 5. How do we manage ventricular septal defects? Small to moderate VSDs do not require operative correction, and in fact, about 50% of small to moderate VSDs will undergo partial or complete spontaneous closure, and the prognosis is excellent. For larger defects, especially when leading to symptoms of heart failure, surgical correction of the defect is recommended within the first few years of life to mitigate further pathologic remodeling of the heart and pulmonary vasculature. Catheter-based occlusion is a newer modality, but most children continue to have open heart surgery to correct these lesions. Last question. Why don't small VSDs generally require surgical correction? Because most small VSDs close spontaneously. And that's all I have today for ventricular septal defects. So let's see if we've completed our goals for this episode. Can you define ventricular septal defects and its pathophysiology? A VSD is an opening in the interventricular septum, usually the membranous portion, that arises because of errors in the embryologic development of this cardiac structure. It is an acyanotic congenital cardiac defect that allows the shunting of blood from the left ventricle into the right ventricle, a left-to-right shunt. Next, can you describe its clinical presentation and the associated complications? Patients with a small VSD are generally asymptomatic. The most prominent physical exam finding is a holosystolic murmur, best heard over the tricuspid area. Patients with a large VSD may present as infants with symptoms of heart failure, such as tachypnea, poor feeding, or poor weight gain. A complication, if left untreated, is the signs and symptoms of Eisenmenger syndrome. Can you list the diagnostic tests used to confirm the diagnosis of a VSD? Echocardiography with Doppler is the definitive diagnostic test for VSDs. And lastly, can you explain the management options for a VSD? Many small to moderate sized VSDs are asymptomatic and will close spontaneously, so treatment is not necessary. A patient with a large symptomatic VSD may need to undergo surgical intervention or a cardiac catheterization procedure to correct the VSD in the first few years of life. Armed with your newfound knowledge of VSDs, let's revisit our patient's story from the beginning of this episode. Thinking back to your newborn patient, Jessica, who presents with a harsh holosystolic murmur in the left lower sternal border, the tricuspid area, as you prepare to explain this finding to her new parents, you wonder. How will you explain the pathophysiology to Jessica's parents? And what is the next step in diagnosis? You explain to Jessica's parents that you heard an extra sound in her heartbeat or a murmur, and that based on the quality and the location, you suspected that it may be a ventricular septal defect. You patiently answer their questions and explain that a VSD is an abnormal opening in a wall in the heart that separates the right ventricle, which pumps out poorly oxygenated blood to the lungs, from the left ventricle, which pumps out highly oxygenated blood to the body. You reassure them that a VSD is the most common congenital heart abnormality, and that in most cases it closes spontaneously, does not require any intervention, and does not cause permanent harm. However, given the potential of this finding, you share that an echocardiogram will be a very important diagnostic test to confirm that the extra heart sound is a VSD, and to give a better guide as what to expect as far as prognosis and spontaneous closure. Jessica's parents are eager to have the echocardiogram completed, and thank you for answering their questions and explaining this so clearly. And that's all I have for today's audio break. Thanks for joining me. If you like this episode, give it a thumbs up or a comment. You can enjoy the full BRIC experience online at www.usmle-rx.com, complete with illustrations, questions, flashcards, and active learning. Stay healthy out there.